There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The Weekend.
It's The Weekend.
Know what The Weekend is for.
And we never stop talking Atlanta sports. This is On the Bench with Garrett Chapman.
Talking Atlanta sports with you, along with special guests to give you the full picture of our Atlanta sports scene.
On the Bench is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Garrett.
What's up, Atlanta? My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me. It's a bit of an interesting show makeup here as we kick off the show. The Atlanta Hawks were playing basketball there. Not very good basketball. They tried their damnedest there at the end, but they went a little long, so that means they cut into this just a little bit. I got Jarvis Davis joining me here in just a moment, but I do want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks. Well, Dom Taraski, the man behind the glass, getting us all set up there on the other side. My name is Garrett Chapman. Let's dive into this really quickly. The Indiana Pacers, they take down the Atlanta Hawks, 132-127. The Atlanta Hawks have now lost eight games in a row. Man, I thought we were on to something. I thought we were doing something good. Atlanta Hawks win three games in a row, and then now, just brutal stretch of play. Trae Young, he scores 26 of his 34 points in the second half. This is a team that was down. We allowed 40 points in the first quarter. Then we score 40 points of our own in the second quarter. Dyson Daniels, he finishes with 23 points. Trae Young, Dyson Daniels, and you can only do so much. No Bogey, no Clint Capella in this game. It's John Fricke was talking about it in the postgame show. Yeah, I know exactly why. You know exactly why they're not in the lineup today. It's because there's likely a move coming. I know Brian Windhorst, we'll hear from him later on in the show. He had already said that these Atlanta Hawks are likely making a move. And Jalen Johnson, with this injury, it kind of feels inevitable. You know, because the Atlanta Hawks can't keep doing what they're doing right now. This is just not sustainable, what's going on right now. It's just not sustainable. Eight losses in a row, 22-27 on the season. Now they're looking up at basically the entire Eastern Conference. And the Bulls are nipping at your heels now. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel for this season. It's basically a wash. I thought it was a valiant effort. It was a valiant effort here from the Atlanta Hawks, but it's just not enough. It's not enough, especially when you're not capable enough. You're not playing enough capable defense here in this game. I felt like at various times throughout the season, the Atlanta Hawks have shown that they're at some level capable of keeping up scoring-wise, but there's just so much fluctuation because this is a team that can turn around and go beat the Boston Celtics and go beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then they turn around and they lose to anybody in the NBA. It's just a frustrating season. And it's just more of the same here. Quinn Snyder, we've had him on with the Steakhouse on several different occasions. And, I mean, he's done an admirable job based off of the injury concerns here. DeAndre Hunter falls flat here in this one. He's had a remarkable comeback season. He's potential player for the Comeback Player of the Year award. But, no, this is a team that it's just not doing enough here. If you want to jump in here, talk about the Atlanta Hawks, 404-726-0929. Jarvis Davis is going to be joining us here in just a moment. We'll talk a little bit of Senior Bowl with him, but we're just going to continue on with this Atlanta Hawks conversation. Coming up next for our Atlanta Hawks, Detroit Pistons, another playoff team, and then it's back home against the San Antonio Spurs. I don't see a win. Milwaukee Bucks, maybe against the Washington Wizards. I mean, at some point, I mean, you're playing for pride at this point. You're playing for pride. I mean, where is this? Where are they going to go? What's because it's not like you can bottom out. You bottom out and you're the Atlanta Hawks, it's all going to fall apart. You don't even control your picks. Man, it's tough. It's frustrating, really, to follow this team right now. And Dyson Daniels also did a pretty good job here. I mean, you look at what the Pacers were able to do on the offensive side of the ball. Tyrese Halliburton's held to just 17 points. You largely hold him in check. It's just frustrating. Is he ready? Oh, he's on with us. All right. Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and pull Jarvis Davis in. Jarvis, I'm frustrated, man. I know you're locked on Atlanta Sports Network. The Atlanta Hawks, man, what do you think about these guys? Is there any end in sight?
No. Ever since Jalen Johnson got hurt, it's been a wrap ever since. We understand what he brings to the table is just that was the biggest blow you can probably take on a season where there was hope. I actually saw the light with the Atlanta Hawks. The way Zacharyce Shea had been playing when he was on the court and healthy and what he was bringing to the table, I saw a big-ish three, you know, with him, Jalen Johnson, and Trae Young. But ever since Jalen Johnson went out, man, it's just been all downhill from there.
Yeah, I was in the same boat, man. I really saw this team making those positive steps. And I was like, maybe you get Zacharyce Shea, you get this young cat. These guys are starting to come together. DeAndre Hunter is starting to find that scoring stroke. You got Dyson Daniels kind of taking up the lead on the defensive side of the ball. And then this injury happens, and it's somebody that, I mean, Jalen Johnson is one of the core guys for this team. I mean, anybody not named Trae Young, I mean, he was probably the guy who you could least afford to lose. And I mean, damn, the proof is in the pudding. But Jarvis Davis joining us down. He was down at the Senior Bowl watching the future NFLers down on the field practice all this week. We had the final game, the climactic end to a big week of preparation. But big takeaways. I know Mike Green was the biggest, I guess, social media riser. I mean, he's, of course, Mike Green from Marshall, 17 sacks last year. He had some pretty incredible and impressive social media play, individual plays, one-on-ones. What did you make of him? Is he somebody who the Atlanta Falcons could inevitably go and target with that 15th pick?
Yeah, he's the type of guy that you need to bring in, right? Like when I saw him firsthand, I kind of got into this a little bit with Carl and Mike on Friday. And the thing for me is I thought there was a little bit of a hesitation maybe in day one with Mike Green, but once he finally got his footing, and it seems like he just said that, all right, I'm about to prove to people what I am, what I'm about. I hear all the noise about the level of competition and all that Sun Belt Conference and all that good stuff, right? I'm about to show you all what time it is. And I think that, you know, Connelly, the tackle that out of Oregon that he went up against, he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then because I even tweeted out before, right after the play happened, I was like, oh, yeah, this is about to go viral. This dog is about to go crazy. And granted, sure enough, maybe 5 minutes later, people were sending me the video of him, you know, running through that tackle like he wasn't even there. And I think that he ended up pulling the Jermaine Johnson. A few years ago, Jermaine Johnson, you know, defensive end out of Florida State, who ended up getting taken by the Jets. He was like, man, I'm out. I ain't got nothing else to prove. So, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, Jermaine Johnson, he was at Old Dominion before he went down to, was that correct? I don't know. Maybe I'm just misremembering. I'm not sure there. But look, the Atlanta Falcons are in desperate need of edge help, defensive line help. They need to get younger at that position, and they need to find a playmaker. I mean, Mike Green was a name that flashed early this week. But as far as who the Falcons could be looking at in at that 15th pick, is this a trade-back scenario to try to find some more assets and get more bites at that apple, or are you finding somebody, maybe like a Walter Nolan, somebody like that, who could be an instant playmaker for you at pick 15?
Well, I'll try to answer that in two different ways, right? First off, I don't think that the Falcons need to go interior defensive line again. I don't think, because I think people have to remember, like, they traded up for Rupa Roro in the second round. And they got Brandon Dorlus, who is a guy who can play on the interior as well. And then you got Grady Onyemata, a guy in Onyemata who I think is not going to be on this roster next year. Because you can save $8 million by cutting him. That's a lot of money to be carrying that you can save. And especially when you're, you know, in the hole right now, as of right now, as far as the salary cap goes, yeah, that makes a lot of sense for to kind of, you know, move on from him. So I feel like the Falcons are in a good shape this year in particular because this draft, I feel, is very deep, you know, as far as defensive line, edge guys, as far as that goes. So I really feel like, you know, Terry can say, okay, somebody is probably going to be willing to jump up for someone, maybe a quarterback that might be still sitting there that got a lot of buzz going on. Jackson Dart, you know, comes to mind off the top of my head. If he's still sitting around, I feel like a team thirsty for a quarterback might want to say, hey, we'll give you a second, we'll give you a third round or whatever, and a mid to late round pick. To jump up in that spot. So that's what you hope for if you're Terry Fontenot as general manager, that, you know, there is a quarterback that kind of fell or and you can kind of leverage some draft capital and still get a good talented type guy and edge player. But a guy that really stood out to me from day one was the edge player out of Boston College and Donovan Ezeraku. He's the guy that I kind of pinned on that first day. I was like, yep, this is a guy that would make a lot of sense for the Atlanta Falcons because he's a versatile guy. He takes stopping the run seriously. I had a conversation with him after practice, that first day of practice, and you can just tell, you can just feel it, that he understands exactly what he needs to prove. And guys who are self-aware at that age coming into the league, like those are guys that tend to have success in the NFL for their career.
Yeah, Ezeraku, Boston College, 6.5 sacks for him last year. I know he's a little bit undersized there, but I know that's going to be an interesting thing if he's coming up to stop the run there. But look, Travis Davis joining me here on the way.
Real quick, Garrett, real quick on that.
Go.
This is coming from a guy who's 6'5", 350 pounds. Size don't matter, man.
It's about that dog, right? Is he one of those guys? Does he have that dog? Is he somebody like that? I mean, that's what this Falcons defense needs more than anything. You need some killers. Is he somebody who can come in here and be a killer?
Absolutely. And not only so, have the want to, he has the trait that's going to translate too.
Okay.
Because being able to have that technique and being able to use the leverage that you're going to have because you're not 6'4", 6'5", you know, like he's 6'2", you know, about 250, you know what I'm saying, like dripping wet. Those are the type of guys that understand that, hey, I know that I have an advantage when I'm going up against that 6'6", 315-pound left tackle.
Yeah.
I know how I can beat him. I know I have a plan on how to beat him going into that situation, and that's what you look for, man. I get it. You know, I get it. Wanting him to be 6'4", 275, lean, 3-4% body fat. I get that whole aspect of it, but for me and what this Falcon team need, they need guys who have the traits to be able to get to the quarterback and stop the run on the way to the quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, like, this is a Falcons defense that needs a lot of different things. One of those things is the cornerback position. Did you see anybody this week? Jarvis Davis joining us here on the Wade4.com hotline. He was down at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama, where draft season gets started. Did you see anybody down there at the cornerback position or in the secondary that could be a game changer here for the Atlanta Falcons, whether it's a day one, day two, day three, anybody like that?
Quincy Riley. Hands down.
Okay.
Cornerback out of Louisville. Guy is just, he just has it. He has a knack for the ball. One thing that really stood out to me was, you know, a lot of times when you have the corners and the wide receivers going up against each other in one-on-ones, a lot of times the offense has the advantage, right? Because they can go out there and run a route that you ain't never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, in, out, in, out, in, out, then get upfield, inside release, and then you try to run a little D route, whatever, and then you're like, oh, yeah, I got you. But more than likely, that's not going to work when you have 10 other guys on the field and different certain coverages that are not necessarily going to work. But he's a guy that was able to work within that situation that I just laid out and make plays on the football. when you have guys making plays on a football like that, I'm talking about several times. It was several times where he had an opportunity to get an interception in the same day. So, yeah, he's a guy that really stood out to me. Quincy Riley, cornerback out of Louisville, is a guy that would look good on a rookie contract next to A.J. Terrell and be around for a few years.
What about Will Johnson, Benjamin Morrison, two of the top names in the draft as far as the cornerback position goes? I would say that you could make an argument that they're cornerback one and two if it wasn't for Travis Hunter. I mean, Travis Hunter, of course, is the flashy toy who's going to do a lot of different things. I mean, Collins Hill, the pride of Collins Hill here in Atlanta, we know all about him. But look, are those two guys something that could move the needle, especially given how deep this draft class is on the defensive line at the edge position?
Sure. I mean, but I'm not looking – if I'm Terry Fontenot, I mean, I know he always real big on best player available and all that stuff. I get that. But I'm not looking at the Will Johnsons of the world. That's just not my priority at this moment because, and this is coming from a defensive lineman, so there's definitely some bias there. Like, if you have good defensive linemen, you can make up for an average to below average corner.
Mm-hmm.
That just –
Well, Jarvis, look at it this way. So three of the top four teams in the AFC and NFC Championship weekend were top six spenders on the defensive line. The only other, that fourth team were the Philadelphia Eagles. That fourth team, the Philadelphia Eagles, having spent how many first-round picks, second-round picks, third-round picks on defensive linemen? Top 50 guys.
Jalen Carter.
Yes.
Nolan, yeah, I mean, it just, the list just goes on and on and on and on. And when you think about Howie Roseman is my ideal general manager.
100%.
Like, I have so much FOMO. Like, man, oh my gosh, why he couldn't be down here in Atlanta? This dude gets it. He understands. It was like that big old behind offensive line that they have over there, man. Like, Mekhi Becton, big butt, playing guard, man. This is dude is just humongous. I just love that mindset of, well, people, and it's funny that you bring that up because people who talk about Jalen Hurts and like his and what he's incapable of, he's not an elite quarterback. You know why he's still here laughing at y'all sitting up in the Super Bowl? Because of those fronts that he has, like the protection that he has, the holes that are being opened up for a guy like Saquon Barkley, who should be in the conversation for a league MVP, but essentially it's a quarterback award. Not essentially, I'm sorry.
Yeah, pretty much.
A quarterback award. It's like the best quarterback in the league is going to get the league MVP. I think Saquon Barkley should get the league MVP award because of what he's done to that team. Because essentially, with you take Saquon Barkley off that squad, those guys aren't in the Super Bowl at all. I don't get it. But the reason why they're in the Super Bowl is because that offensive line, Saquon Barkley's greatness, and Jalen Carter is becoming one of the best, if not the best, defensive tackle in the league, man. And the dude has already made an all-pro team, man. He was sitting right there, Garrett.
Right there, man.
Right there. But, we're not going to get into that. You know what I'm saying? We won't be popular.
Hey, man. I know I've had this conversation with Steak Shapiro in the Steakhouse on several occasions. He says, I'd rather have Bijan Robinson. I say, okay, I'll shake your hand and disagree. But, I mean, Jalen Carter is the guy. Jalen Carter is going to be Aaron Donald 2.0. That's literally what he is. He's a game wrecker. He's a game changer. But, and last question here, Jarvis, finishing up here on the wait4.com hotline on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Jarvis, what separates the Atlanta Falcons from those teams that we saw last Sunday and inevitably the two teams that we're going to see next Sunday? Is it as simple as just having the dude at the quarterback position and filling out with dudes on the defensive line? Or how close are we to potentially competing at that level? What is it going to take?
That is a great question. I feel like the Falcons are in good shape with where they are with offensive line. Obviously, they have to figure out a way to get Drew Dalvin back on his team just from a continuity standpoint. I feel like that is more important as far as offensive line goes. And then you have an excellent coach in Dwayne Ledford to continue to coach those guys up and bring them around. And I think that Terry's going to have to figure out a way to bring some young talent in on that side just from a longevity standpoint. So I feel like making sure Drew Dalvin finds his way back on this team and getting some depth behind him, maybe figure out a way to bring Ryan Newsel back as well. I like what he brings to the table from a fill-in standpoint. And then you got to go with that defensive line, man. You have to get guys in here that can rush the quarterback. From an edge standpoint, the Falcons have Arne Ebikasie and D'Angelo Blount. That's it. That's only for, that was the only two edge players that they have currently under contract.
Yeah.
So they have to figure out a way to get one or two guys, whether it be a combination of draft, which they better go in the first round, I feel, this year, and a veteran that come in that you know can get to the quarterback, get to the quarterback in spot duty. So I feel like if they're able to get those two things, shoring up the offensive line, making sure the same names are on there that they had this year, and then bringing in a couple edge guys from a veteran and a rookie that can come in and have immediate impact for you, those two things I feel will get the Falcons back to at least knowing that they have a good shot once they get into the playoffs, right? Because I feel like Michael Penix is the quarterback of the future. I know it was only three games, small sample size, all that crap, well, yada, yada, yada. But when you think about the situation that he came into, the dude came in and played ball. He made plays for you. And those are the type of things that can solidify you as one of the good young quarterbacks in the NFL.
Hey, Jarvis, how about a defense that doesn't give up 40-plus points to Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers? Thanks so much, buddy.
That sounds like a plan, man. I'm all for it, man.
maybe then we can win an NFC South for the first time in, I don't know, 8 years. Oh, my God. All right, hey, Jarvis Davis from the Locked On Atlanta Sports Network. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, buddy. Talk soon. All right. When we get back, there ain't nothing more American than this. I'll tell you what that is. You're coming off the bench with me. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome in. Off the bench. My name is Garrett Chapman. His name is Dom Taroski there on the other side of the glass. We're going to talk some NFL football. Thank you to Jarvis Davis for joining me here. We had a great time here. I'm looking at this NCAA bracketology because the Duke Blue Devils. Oh, you got the what was this, LaMelo Ball?
Yeah, I throw it in when I can.
Oh my God, I didn't catch it at first. I was like, so just for everybody at home, Dom Taroski sitting there like just grinning ear to ear. Man, I didn't put two together, doing two together until I heard the whoa. It kind of hits.
It's a nice song. It kind of hits. It's fun. Good for Jello. Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about who's winning more than LeVar Ball. I mean, this is a guy who talked all that mess a couple of years ago, and then everyone talked about how LaMelo Ball was kind of a washout in the NBA or whatever. I mean, he still dude made an NBA roster. I understand he spent more time on the G League than he did in the NBA, but dude, that's like a 0.01% of people who play basketball.
All three of your kids were on an NBA roster.
That's incredible.
Very impressive.
And now it might end up being LaMelo Ball who's might have the best year of all of them. I mean, this guy, he's going to go perform at like a rap festival or something coming up here.
LiAngelo.
Yes. LaMelo. I'm thinking of the guy who's just signed a max contract.
Yeah, he's in Charlotte. Yeah, he's doing just
fine.
Too.
Yeah, he's doing just fine. Yeah, and then Lonzo Ball, of course, was the top pick for the Lakers, and now he's up. Where is he now? Is he with the Bulls?
He's back, and he's worked his way back from injury. He's had some good games. He's not the same guy, but he's kind of. I mean, he's been out of the game for 2 years, basically, with this.
Yeah,
injury,
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah,
it's been a real long time. Now I'm looking at your Duke Blue Devils here, and 87-70 was the final here in this one. They've won 15 straight games for the first time in over a decade, longest active streak in Division I. They have the Auburn Tigers who just extended their winning streak. College basketball this year, especially in the SEC, I'm looking at Joe Lunardi's 60-18 bracket as it stands right now. The Georgia Bulldogs sitting in there at the 10 seed. Dude, the SEC might have 13 teams.
Yeah.
13 teams in this bracket. That's absolutely
They told me this
nuts.
Was a football conference.
No, dude, that's the craziest thing. They dominate in football, and yes, they're still king of college football. I understand they haven't won a national championship for two seasons. Oh, my God. Anybody wants to bury them, be careful. Make sure they're actually dead before you start dancing on that grave, but wouldn't surprise me if they come back and win it against next year. But look, I mean, you got some really good teams here in the SEC. Georgia's struggling. Let me pull up their schedule here. They lose to Alabama kind of in
today, yeah.
Ugly fashion here, 90-69. I was following it intermittently during the Hawks game. We were running the Hawks Network here at the studio at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and they were playing okay. I mean, they were hanging around, but Alabama just plays so fast. And this team, they score 51 points in the second half. When you have a team that plays that fast, they just sort of crush you. And it's so easy to crush that spirit. And you got Kentucky here, who's another type of team that can do that. They play really fast basketball. Auburn is just tough as can be. I mean, the SEC is just a gauntlet. I've even mentioned Tennessee, Florida. Those are all top 10 teams. Oh, my God. I mean, you look at football. The basketball might be better in this conference. Baseball is on that level, too. The SEC, man, I mean, life is pretty good for those folks. I know, man, Auburn's 20-1. That's incredible. Golly. The more I just read into this, the more I feel like Jade Billis actually said this earlier in the week. We'll get into that when we get to the audio overload later on in the show. But he says that winning the SEC tournament is going to be harder than winning the NCAA tournament. Which I would not be surprised about that fact. I mean, the SEC this year, I bet none of those teams would trade winning the NCAA tournament for an SEC tourney. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's just how deep this conference is. But, Don Trotsky, what do you say? Let's talk some NFL football.
It's time for the Pick Six.
A look around the NFL with Off the Bench.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Let's talk some Super Bowl action here. Of course, you've got the Kansas City Chiefs. You've got the Philadelphia Eagles. I talked to Jarvis Davis a little bit about what separates the Atlanta Falcons from those teams. And look, those are pretty good squads. Let's just say that. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons, they haven't had a winning record in 7 seasons. They haven't won the NFC South in 8 seasons. And that was back when they had that nasty game that I don't want to talk about that ended in pretty negative fashion. So, look, the Falcons, they have some positives. They have some things that, you know, you could build on. You got a great young quarterback who I think could be part of the future. But let's just focus on these two teams who are playing next Sunday. These are the two best teams in the NFL. I think we can firmly agree on that fact. I understand the Lions were the number one seed in the NFC, but now the Philadelphia Eagles have been the best team in the NFC, I would say, for the last 8 to 10 weeks of the season. I feel like once we got to that mid-season mark, once Hutchinson goes down with that injury, the edge rusher up there for Detroit, once he went down, yeah, it's great that they can score a bunch of points, but when the going gets tough in the NFL playoffs, that's when you need to be able to win in a lot of different ways, and the Philadelphia Eagles can do that. They showed that they could do that in the NFC Championship game when Jalen Hurts comes out and just balls out. I mean, he throws for 300-plus yards or something in that game, and then you have Patrick Mahomes, the juggernaut, and this is where I get into my main point, because people hate the Kansas City Chiefs, and I want people to hesitate before they compare them to the New England Patriots. I've seen this on Twitter, especially younger people, Dom, like people who are our age, comparing them favorably, or I guess the Patriots favorably to what we're seeing right now with the Kansas City Chiefs, saying, I apologize to all of the New England Patriots fans or whatever, this is so much worse. No, it's not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Nothing is worse than what we had with the New England Patriots. I mean, you've got Bill Belichick, who's the hoodie man, who's effectively Lord Sidious out here, the way he wears that hoodie and flips the hood up. And then you got Tom Brady, who, I mean, Tom Brady's he's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. He's won 7 Super Bowls. He deserves that title until taken away. But people do hate the Kansas City Chiefs. I understand the flopping with Patrick Mahomes and everything else. Travis Kelce is in your face with Taylor Swift. Andy Reid, I love Andy Reid. If anybody hates Andy Reid, I need you to call in and tell me why, because I don't understand if there's a real reason for that. But Travis Kelce, of course, he's with Taylor Swift. He actually was on, and he was asked about this. He loves to be hated.
I love it. At one point in time, you know, it wasn't that. And,
yeah, you were the cinder. You guys were the darling of the NFL.
Yeah, I was the do you feel bad for him, guys? And
you're now the heel.
I'm enjoying doing this with the guys together, the guys that we have in there, because it's like it just makes us even more of a family.
Yeah, that's the Kelce brothers, of course, on the New Heights podcast. Really good podcast. If you haven't heard of it, I'm sure everybody and their mother has heard about it at this point. But look, I feel like there's nothing more American than being a hater. I think that that's just the personification of American sports. I mean, who's the most hated team in the NFL? The Dallas Cowboys. Do you know why everybody hates them? Because they're America's team. That's why everybody hates them. I mean, granted, they've been one of the most fun teams to see lose. One of the worst playoff teams the last 30 years. Now that the Commanders made it to the NFC Championship game, they have the longest drought. It's been since 1994, Dom. It's just an unbelievable stretch of a bad play. But, I mean, people hate the Lakers. People hate the Boston Celtics. People hate the New York Knicks. People hate teams. I mean, the Knicks, not exactly a dynasty. I don't hesitate from that. But any team that wins at a high level. People hate Alabama, Ohio State, Texas.
The thing about a dynasty is that in order to be a dynasty, at some point you have to have beaten everybody. So everyone has a reason to hate you because at some point you've lost to the dynasty.
Yeah.
It builds it up. Now, I do think that with the Chiefs, it's a little bit different. Like, I agree. I think the Chiefs are a lot more likable than the Patriots were.
Yeah.
The Patriots had, like, everyone talks about, oh, the refs. Every team gets calls. Every superstar gets calls. Like, that happens. It is what it is. I'm not one of those people that harps too much on that. But, like, with the – if you're angry about, like, the Chiefs and, like, the refs, the NFL literally created a rule for the Patriots to win. So, like, it's a little
the
different.
Tuck rule is
the Tuck rule is something
special.
That was called once and then never got called again. Quite literally, the NFL made a rule for the Patriots to win. So – I understand where some people might have some fatigue with the Chiefs. And also, I do think there's a level of overexposure just because of social media is in play where it wasn't really in play with the Patriots, at least at the beginning. And then also the Patriots did have like a 10-year window where they didn't win. So it kind of gave you a little bit of a reprieve. We're like
but they were still kicking ass.
Yeah,
they were still kicking ass.
But they weren't
that.
Making it to the AFC Conference Championship game and Super Bowl every year. This is what year like 7 in a row for the Chiefs.
It's unbelievable.
It's insane.
It's unbelievable. That level of dominance from Patrick Mahomes in this offense. And to be called the dynasty, you say you have to beat everybody. I guess that's true. I say you have to win 3. So to any Georgia fans out there, Georgia's not a dynasty. That's not a dynasty yet. They're not at that level. Alabama is the only dynasty that we've had in this sport, in college football, for the last 20 years. That's the only dynasty we've had. You have to have 3. That's my opinion. And look, and in college football especially, you have to do it with 2 different quarterbacks. So at that level, then you could throw Clemson into that. Just what they did over like that 5-year span where they get Deshaun Watson gets one and then Trevor Lawrence gets one. Just because of the amount of turnover and how things change, it's a culture thing, everything else. So Georgia's not exactly there yet. I think they got to win another before they're officially that dynasty level, quote unquote, to bring it back to the college ranks. But the Kansas City Chiefs are absolutely in that dynasty level. And look, they're going for history now. And if anybody's going to step in that way, Philadelphia Eagles feel like the team to do it. This is a team that can do absolutely everything on the football field. They run the ball well. They pass the ball well enough. If Jalen Hurts is cooking, then that offense is very hard to stop. It's not. But these defenses, man, I mean, Spags, what he's been able to do this year and really every year of this dynasty, he is the unsung hero for these Kansas City Chiefs. What he's been able to do with Chris Jones on one side and Karlaftis and all these other dudes, they got some guys on that defense. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, we talked about that with Jarvis Davis last segment. They got some dudes of their own. Someplace that doesn't have a lot of dudes, the New Orleans Saints. Does anybody want this job? I don't think anybody really does. I know Aaron Glenn was a target for them. He says, nah. He goes to the New York Jets. The Detroit offensive coordinator, of course, Ben Johnson. He was the prize target in this coaching second. Now he's going to go to Chicago. Well, what about Mike McCarthy? Oh, no. Actually, he chose retirement. Not retirement, but he chose unemployment. As in, literally, he would rather not coach this year than coach the New Orleans Saints. What about Joe Brady? Nah. No, I'm going to stick it out in with the Bills Mafia here. I'm going to stick it up here. Well, Kellen Moore. He's reportedly in the driver's seat, but then ESPN 104.2, they say he's, quote, not sold on it. And this is what they had to say.
This is the worst spot in the NFL. They can't hire anybody. They're at the bottom of the barrel. It's the worst situation in the sport. It's no way anybody can rescue it. No one's even taking the job. Loomis is a disaster. This is the worst this franchise has ever been. Like, that's kind of the resounding chorus. The Saints are a laughing stock.
Oh, that is true. I didn't see that coming. An astute observation.
Yeah. Thank you, Anchorman. That's beautiful. Beautiful. Ha! We're all laughing. The New Orleans Saints, absolutely a dumpster fire. And I'm here for it. I know we're a little bit over. I just wanted to get that shot in because New Orleans Saints aren't going anywhere.
So what's crazy to me, though, is that like the fact that someone, Aaron Glenn, chose the headache of Aaron Rodgers and the Jets over the Saints. That says a lot to me.
You owe $50 million to a quarterback who ain't going anywhere. You got an aging defense. You don't have the Chris Olave is a good piece. Your best offensive weapon is an Alvin Kamara who's, I mean, I love Alvin Kamara. I'm a big fan of Alvin Kamara. Mm-hmm. Look, I am. But he's over the hill. I mean, he's at that point where
he's 30.
He's 30 years old, and running backs hit that wall. And the defense is aged out. It's expensive. and it's not good enough. That's really what it comes down to. And Mickey Loomis, he was heralded as this cap expert. Well, we had a cap hell here in Atlanta. I think they're going to have a new definition. You talk about the seven layers of hell. It's pretty brutal. That brings a new definition to Dante's Inferno. Kind of tough spot there for New Orleans. But you know what? I'm here for it. I'll celebrate it just a little bit. I'm a hater. I'll admit that fact. But are the Braves the only thing standing in the way of the L.A. Dodgers? I don't talk about Dante's Inferno. That's what Major League Baseball's been. Just watching the Dodgers do everything that they've been doing. Are the Braves the only thing standing in their way? We'll discuss that next. Grant McCauley joins me right here. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Garrett Chapman, you're coming off the bench with me. Final hour here, and I'm talking a little bit of Braves baseball, and nobody better to do that with than Grant McCauley, 92.9 The Game's own. He's joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Grant McCauley, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me. It is almost that time of year, so I guess we'll be talking quite a bit.
Yeah, we're kicking off the month of February the right way, the only way I know how, and that's with some Braves conversation. And look, Jurickson Profar, I mean, his addition, I think, immediately catapults the Atlanta Braves into just a fantastic category of elite baseball outfields. I would say that this group has an argument, at least, to say that they are potentially the best outfield group in Major League Baseball. Why, do you think that they could be in that conversation, Grant?
No, I think they definitely are. And this was kind of the question of, could they find that third to go along with Michael Harris, the second in center field, and obviously the return of Ronald Acuna Jr., which I'm sure we'll talk about the timetable for that. But yeah, you start to look at these guys individually and then collectively. I mean, this is a very talented outfield. I would say at least the best in the National League, and I'd be hard-pressed to find too many others that I would say that the Braves are trailing behind. But, of course, it's all going to be contingent on, as we learned in 2024, health, which will affect production. And you know, with Jurickson Profar in particular, I know he's coming off a career year, but talking to Alex Anthopoulos, he believes, and the Braves believed in making this deal, that the changes that he made, the adjustments, and the year that the production that it unlocked, that that's who he is moving forward. So they felt good about signing into that three-year contract, and we'll all find out together like how Jurickson Profar fits in, not only to the outfield, but what kind of impact he can have on the lineup. Because we learned a year ago, even the best laid plans can go wrong. So the more talent you have, the more quality that you have in your quantity, the Braves are certainly big fans of that.
And Grant, you mentioned the injury coming, or players coming back from injury. Spencer Strider, of course, is the big one alongside of a MVP winner in Ronald Acuna. Is that still looking kind of like an April-May situation, or could we be waiting a little bit longer?
I think it's an early season deal for Ronald Acuna Jr. I would say about a 6-week timetable. Could he get back a little bit quicker? Yes. I expect to see him in April. Not really. And I think that they learned a lot from his last rehab, but they're also not looking to just sideline him if they do believe he is ready and able to come back and has been able to get all the bats that he needs to feel like he's kind of up to speed and ready to face off against Major League pitching again, then they'll go ahead and make that one happen. With Spencer Strider, I think you just have to be more methodical because of the elbow injury to a pitcher who's already had Tommy John. This was obviously a UCL bracing procedure, so not a ligament replacement, but still an invasive one-year recovery time. You know, a lot of rehab is going to be involved in this, but no particular setbacks for these guys, and I could see them both being back before the month of May is over. But Acuna, I think, is out in front of Strider in terms of the how quick he could get back and how much I would expect early in the season for there to be one of the two of them making an impact. I would give the nod to Ronald Acuna Jr.
Yeah, and with Spencer Strider on the shelf here for the foreseeable future, I mean, one of the biggest things that I know talking heads like me, I guess, we're looking at a potential addition of a veteran starter, and Charlie Morton had a chance to come back. He opted to leave, or I guess they mutually agreed to part ways. We could put it that way. But look, this is a team that likely still needs a starter. This is a team that could always use bullpen help. I think every Major League Baseball team can use bullpen help. Do you see any more moves coming potentially between now and the start of spring training, or even the season kicking off in March?
Yeah, I definitely expect there to be some movement in the bullpen, and whether that is, higher upper echelon, reliever that might be still out there, like a David Robertson, somebody like that that's got a pedigree for closing or setting up, or if it's some of these guys that you might see getting cut loose. I mean, Pedro Avila of the Guardians was somebody that just got designated for assignment. Ryan Brazier of the Dodgers is somebody that's available out there. I don't know what that trade would look like between the Braves and Dodgers, and I would think that there would be trade interest for Brazier, but there are a lot of unsigned players heading towards spring training, so there are still possibilities to add in the pitching department. And I think reliever is one of those that you can throw both some quantity and some quality, or maybe throwing a few names out there gets you the one that can help you out, kind of the way maybe Nick Anderson did a couple of years ago with the Braves as their primary setup man until he went down. But with no Joe Jimenez and obviously with A.J. Minter now a New York Met, that's going to be a very different-looking bullpen mix getting to Raisel Iglesias. They do have Pierce Johnson in place. They do have Aaron Bummer. They do have Dylan Lee. And they also believe a lot in Daisbell Hernandez. And we'll see what role Grant Holmes ends up playing. But I still think they're missing an arm, if not two, in that bullpen to really feel like they've got their full accompaniment of arms that they need for high-leverage situations that aren't the ninth inning.
So do you think pitching is the thing that's going to hold this team back? I know I looked at last year, and obviously it was a kind of an anomaly type of season, following an anomaly type of season where they were the best hitting team in the history of baseball. And then you come into last year, it was kind of a letdown season. Not kind of, it was certainly a pretty large letdown season just in terms of production. But now Vegas has them slated to win 93 games, which is actually ahead of the Phillies, the team who won last year, and you have the upstart Mets who just go out and make the big splash of the offseason with Soto. Should the Braves be considered the favorite to win the division for a seventh time in the last 8 years, or do you what's going to hold this team back?
I mean, I still think they have a strong argument for it, but to go back to that pitching, I mean, the Braves got more than they could have possibly expected out of Chris Sale and Ronaldo Lopez. Are those guys going to be able to produce like that again? And now let's throw a third name into that, more than you could have expected or bargained for, Spencer Schwellenbach. What is his first full season as a major league starter going to look like? And will he be able to replicate the success that he had as one of the Braves' best arms, bar none, in 2024? That, along with Spencer Strider, is the core of a very good starting rotation. But I do still feel like they need one more starter of the veteran proven variety that can give them 175 or so innings, take the ball 30, basically do what Charlie Morton was doing at the worst, to just strengthen and fortify that rotation. You lose Max Fried and Charlie Morton, that's 60 starts and 350-ish innings that you don't have in your rotation that you did a year ago. Spencer Strider's return obviously can be impactful, and clearly when healthy, he's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball as well. But I still think from a numbers perspective, even with some of the minor league options that you could start to talk about from both prospects and guys that we've seen a little bit that are out of options and you've got to figure it out, I just feel like you'd want a little bit more in the certainty department if you can, in fact, guarantee that, which I guess you can't. And 2024 showed us that. But now to go back to the division, I think the Braves have as strong an argument as anybody because none of these teams are perfect. But when it comes to the overall dynamics of the roster construction, I feel like the Braves, again, I hate using this word, and I really want to stop having to throw it out there as a disclaimer, but the Braves, when healthy, I do feel like are so well constructed that this is a team that everybody else in the National League has been on notice for a number of years. The Phillies are going to be a good club. We know that. The Mets are obviously back in their money-spending mode. Mm-hmm. Can they do enough around Soto and obviously Francisco Lindor? They still have questions about Pete Alonso. You know, rotationally speaking, will the pitching stay healthy for them? Everybody's got to go through it, but those are the three teams that you really expect to be fighting for this thing, and it could be a very, very intriguing summer between the Braves, the Mets, and the Phillies in that National League East race, and then, of course, we know that can have some serious wild card implications as well.
Grant McCauley joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline, talking all things Atlanta Braves, as we are just 12 days away from pitchers and catchers reporting for spring training. Hard to believe, but the regular season is just around the corner. But look, you talk about bounce-back seasons, and you say win healthy, right? Mm-hmm. This is a team that really struggled with health last year. Ozzie Albies missed extended time. Austin Riley missed extended time. But then on top of that, you have guys like Matt Olson had a terrible first half. He bounced back in the second half and kind of salvaged a pretty solid season last year. But there's a guy like Orlando Arcia, somebody who really struggled and was statistically one of the very worst players at the plate in all of baseball last year.
Yeah.
Who is that guy who you could see having that bounce back year this year and potentially being one of the reasons why the Braves inevitably win the division like Vegas says they will?
You know, I'll point at Austin Riley and just say that this is a guy that you need to be doing the things that he's done when healthy year in and year out, and that's hit 35 homers, drive in 100 runs, and be a force in the middle of that lineup. That was one of the – you just kept waiting in that second half as more and more injuries would mount, wondering, I mean, is this the straw that broke the camel's back with the Braves? I mean, how in the world did they win 89 games a year ago? I mean, that's something that we may be studying for quite a while to figure the whole thing out. The answer, of course, was pitching, because the offense did take a step back. Now, is Orlando Arcia the player that he was in 2023 when he was an all-star, hitting 270 with some power, good defense? Maybe not every year, but is he as bad as the player that he was in 2024, where he was, bar none, one of the worst players, especially with runners in scoring position in all of Major League Baseball? The truth is probably somewhere in between. And I think that in a completely different sphere, we could say the same about, is Matt Olson the guy who's going to flirt with 60 homers every year, or is he a guy that can just put together a better season than he did in 2024? And I think the answer to that is yes, he certainly can. But you need Riley and Olson to do their thing as durable, everyday cornerstones, bring Ronald Acuna Jr. back. I mean, treat him with kid gloves if you have to, but I think he could surprise us knowing what he knows now about his previous knee rehab from 2021 into 2022. I think he's going to approach it differently in 2025. I hate that he's going through it again. Obviously, that was a huge loss for the Braves, not having perhaps the most dynamic player in baseball available to you for essentially all but 2 months of the season. That was part of the story. But you need bounce backs from Sean Murphy as well, I believe. You need a healthy Michael Harris for the course of the season. That didn't happen a year ago either. He had to kind of go through it. Everybody seemed like they had something going on. So if the Braves can keep this offense, any version of this offense, as healthy as possible, this is an extremely good group, and I think that it should be, once again, a top five offense at the very least. And I didn't even touch on Marcell Ozuna, who has just simply the last couple of years put the Braves lineup on his back at times, especially last year, and carried this club. So you need another season out like that out of him, and then we'll see what all this adds up to. But the potential is there. The track record's certainly there. If the health is there, I have to believe in this group as being one of the better offenses that you'll find, not just in the National League, but all of baseball.
Yeah, certainly one of the ones, the top lineups in baseball is the team out in L.A. I mean, this is a group that continues to stockpile talent. They just go out and add Kirby Yates to the bullpen, throw an absurd amount of money his way. And all of this is deferred money. Is this something that Major League Baseball needs to police? Is how are they able to continuously get away with this deferred money crap? And is this just bad for baseball?
I mean, I'll say this. The collective bargaining agreement that comes up in a couple of years may be the most contentious that we have ever seen from the standpoint of spending money, deferred money. And when I say spending money, not just, hey, everybody's upset that the Dodgers are doing more than they're doing. Well, everyone has the opportunity to spend, and I would argue more than they do. We hear plenty about it here in Atlanta. Liberty Media's got some very deep pockets. Why don't they just go out and contend and compete with the Dodgers and the Mets and all these? Well, very few clubs, I feel like, can operate that way. And the Dodgers are an interesting case study in that, will this deferred money ultimately bite them at some point? They don't believe so, and we'll find out. But I would also say that there are teams out there. Oakland has been one year after year after year. The Pittsburgh Pirates, the Miami Marlins, I'll point at those three in particular. You've got clubs that are receiving revenue spending or revenue sharing dollars and not putting it back into the on-field product. They're using it as part of their business model to turn a profit every year with no motivation whatsoever to become bigger or better spenders or build a more complete roster, because they can just point at the Dodgers and cry poor. And I feel like that is as detrimental to Major League Baseball as the bigger spending teams are the ones that are just living off the revenue sharing system with no motivation ever to spend. That also hurts the market, and it affects the game and the integrity of the game, if we want to get into that old argument, which I don't know if we have enough time for that. But either way, there are a lot of different pieces, the moving parts of this, when they start to sit down and try to hammer out this next collective bargaining agreement. And that is why I think so many people have kind of wondered, are we staring at a work stoppage, and would we be staring at one that might cost us an entire season? I believe that would be absolutely foolish and would set the sport back, and I've said this before, a couple of decades. So hopefully cooler heads prevail. They figure this whole thing out. But there are a lot of people feeling some kind of way about the Dodgers spending and about other clubs that just routinely, annually, perennially have no motivation whatsoever to actually be competitive.
Yeah, granted, it really does at times feel like it's Major League Baseball. The 29 clubs against the L.A. Dodgers, they're looking to win a second consecutive World Series title. Maybe it's the Braves or the team that steps up and beats them in the playoffs again. Anything can happen in October. But Grant McCauley, 12 days until we get to pitchers and catchers down there in Florida. I can't wait, and I know you can't either. Looking forward to all that conversation and more. Grant McCauley, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. When we get back, the Atlanta Falcons, what separates them from these teams that we saw last weekend in conference championship weekend? I'll give you one or two things. When we get back, you're coming off the bench with Garrett Chapman right here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What can the Atlanta Falcons learn from the teams playing in the conference championship weekend? What can we learn? Well, I know for one thing that we don't have Jaden Daniels. Yeah, we got Michael Penix. I feel pretty good about that. We don't have Patrick Mahomes. We don't have Josh Allen. We don't have any of those guys. I mean, look, Jalen Hurts is a great player, too. $50 million quarterback. He's pretty darn good. There's a little bit more to it than that. We've got a great quarterback here under center in Atlanta. Michael Penix is the future. He's somebody who projects to be really a superstar at quarterback. I feel pretty good about our offense. Dom Tarosky, Garrett Chapman here in the Kia Studios talking Atlanta Falcons football here on Sports Radio 92 on The Game. You're coming off the bench with me. The offense feels fine. Darnell Mooney will be back. He was a gnat's eyelash from 1,000 yards last season. And look, if he wasn't injured in that last game, I bet he gets there. Drake London, he's there. I think with Michael Penix under center, he finally has a quarterback who's going to get him over the top and be that consistent stud. I talked to Steak Shapiro about this on the Steakhouse Monday through Friday. Drake London was the guy who felt like he was always capable of giving you that, you know, like if you give you that 75 yards, and I was like, okay, that was good, but where's that buck 50? Where's that two-touchdown game? Where's that take-over-you-can't-touch-me game? Well, with Michael Penix under center, he kind of became that guy. And if we can see more of that, I feel really good. Kyle Pitts, I don't want to talk about him. Bijan is the dude. He is a monster for this offense. They're going to be fine. I feel good about where this offense is. Now go sign Drew Dahlman on that offensive line. Gets that continuity. I mean, Caleb McGarry is under contract through 2025. He'll be here. Matthew Bergeron, left tackle, Jake Matthews, they're here. Chris Lindstrom just signed a massive contract. Keep that continuity on the offensive line. I feel fine about where our offense is. That's not what's keeping us from winning an NFC South title. That's not what's keeping us from getting a winning record for the first time in almost a decade. One of the worst losing streaks or streak of losing seasons in NFL history. Top 15. One of the very worst in NFL history. 7 consecutive years. Well, what's stopping us from getting to that level? The answer is not complicated. Where's the defense? I'm going to say something that's been said on this station. We came on the air in 2012. Do you know what else happened in 2012? We lost John Abraham. You know what else we've been asking for on this station and everywhere across this damn city? Who's going to rush the passer? We thought we had something in Vic Beasley. He goes off, gets 15 and a half sacks. It's great. Oh, my God, we're finally here. Oh, it's the moment that we've been waiting for. No, never mind. Dude doesn't love football, and he's gone. Tack McKinley, we take him instead of T.J. Watt. Now we're stuff. Thank you. Yeah. Dom Tarosky, noted Steelers fan. Jeff Ulbrich's actually the reason that we took Tack McKinley. He fell in love with him at the Senior Bowl, but now T.J. Watt's up there in Pittsburgh, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL right now, if not the best. Got to draft better. You need to find those dudes on the defensive line. I talked to Jarvis Davis earlier in the show. He says we don't need necessarily a defensive lineman, an interior defensive lineman. I completely disagree. We need killers. Ruka Roro, is he a killer? I don't know. I have no idea. Braylon Trice, what's he going to do? The Falcons draft pick last year. Of course, he gets hurt. Has the injury. We don't see him at all this year. I don't blame him necessarily for that, but Rook dealt with injury issues throughout the course of the season. Falcons, I mean, it just seems to be the nature of the game for these guys. I mean, you go up and down this list on the defensive line, it's just not good enough. And Jarvis made a really good point. He was with the Locked On Network. And he talked about how great defensive line play seems to shroud a secondary, an average secondary even, and it covers it up just a little bit. When was the last time, if ever, the Atlanta Falcons have had a defensive line that can support the rest of their defense to the level. It's okay. Those guys don't have to be playmakers. You don't need A.J. Terrell to live on an island and play 5 seconds of perfect football in the secondary. We're asking him to do that for large portions of football games. That's not good enough. Do you know why the New England Patriots were able to do what they did for so long? They had a dominant defense, especially a dominant defensive line. Why are the Philadelphia Eagles doing what they're doing? Well, it's because they go get guys like Jordan Davis. They go get guys like N'Kobe Dean at the second level. They go get Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith, Milton Williams. I mean, these are guys who are going to go get paid. What about the Commanders? Well, they got a guy like Daron Payne. I mean, these guys are everywhere. When you get to this level, three of the four teams that were playing in championship weekend had top six spending on the defensive line alone, just the defensive line. The fourth team was the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's because all of those guys are first-round picks on rookie contracts. And you got a guy like Josh Sweat, who's labeled as a linebacker. He's not labeled as a defensive lineman, but he spends more time on the edge rushing the passer. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons have had a consistent issue. It's been something that plagued this team when Thomas Dimitroff was calling the shots for a decade. And look, he had a 15-year run that was fantastic. You have a 15-year run in the NFL. That's a pretty damn good resume. Got the team to multiple NFC championship games. He was the first time this team had ever gotten over the hump and had back-to-back winning seasons. Yeah, it took almost 50 years for that to happen. But how do we get back over that hump? We've been sitting here banging our head against the wall. It feels so simple because it is. These are teams that tackle well. These are teams that play dominant football in the trenches. Massive investments in your offensive line. The Commanders notwithstanding, who I felt like was coming into the season last year, I thought they projected to be one of the worst. But when you have a guy like Jaden Daniels at your quarterback position, I think that kind of covers a lot of things up. They got explosive passing attacks. They've got fantastic offenses. They can run the ball effectively. I think we got that. We've got that. We've got an explosive passing attack. We've got a rushing attack that can turn into explosiveness. We can do a lot of different things. I mean, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They have the second coming of Kareem Hunt, who I don't think anybody in their right mind expected. Isaiah Pacheco has been fantastic for them this year. I mean, Saquon Barkley, I mean, he should be the MVP this year if it wasn't for a damn quarterback award that it's morphed into here in recent years. The offense is fine. And I asked him about, I asked Jarvis earlier, maybe we go get a member in the secondary. But no, I'm tired of this. Who is the dude on the defensive line? I mean, you can look at a couple of these guys. I mean, is Mike Green going to be that guy? I understand you're looking at a guy who played at Marshall. 17 sacks. That's pretty damn good. You know, that should be good enough to get you consideration. He dominates here at the Senior Bowl. But where's our Jalen Carter? We had a chance to bring him in. I mean, Jalen Walker, is he going to be on the board? Is he going to even be available at this point? The closer we get to this draft, and I understand we're still just getting started, and there's going to be fluctuation. It's going to go up and down, and these guys are going to be projected to go at different places. But Micah Williams, I mean, these are Georgia Bulldogs who dominated in Athens. They dominated in Athens. Jalen Walker just won a damn Butkus Award. But something we've seen consistently from this franchise is, for whatever reason, a hesitancy to draft these Georgia guys. I don't understand it. Kirby Smart is a phone call away. He's an hour and a half drive down 316. Drive down there, watch them practice, and then ask yourself a legitimate question: why aren't you drafting one of these guys? Because it doesn't make any sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense to me. You've had desperate needs on the defensive line for over a decade. We watch these guys every single Saturday in the fall. They dominate. They won a national championship in 2021 because of guys like Jordan Davis, because of guys like Jalen Carter, because of guys like N'Kobe Dean and Nolan Smith. One team goes out and drafts all of those guys. That team is playing in a Super Bowl. It's not that complicated. John Kincaid was on this station, I don't know, a week ago, ahead of the NFC Championship game. And credit to him, he came on here and he said that the Eagles were going to destroy the Commanders. He was right. But he said it was because this team has an affinity for the shiny toy. And they do. I love Bijan Robinson. I love Drake London. I just spent 10 minutes talking about how much I like him, how much I think that they have us set up for the future. You know what else I like? Winning football games. They've been here for now two, three years. Kyle Pitts is a disaster. Absolutely unmitigated disaster. And Terry Fontenot doesn't get enough heat for that selection. But if this team just feels like it's spinning its wheels and it's done this same song and dance. You look at the best teams in the NFL. They don't have these issues. The best teams in the NFL. Look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Iron Curtain of the 70s. Football is football. Good football teams dominate the trenches. It's not that complicated. Why did the Ohio State Buckeyes just go win a national championship game? Because they had dominance in the defensive line. It's not that complicated. And look, if I'm general manager, I'm taking a defensive lineman in the top 50 every single year. Because it's not like the offensive line. Where look, the Falcons, you go get Drew Dahlman, you have that consistency, you get a great offensive line coach, and they can play as a unit. That's solid. You can cover up a lot of holes there. The defensive line is not that way. You need dudes. You need dudes. The Falcons have David Onyemata and Grady Jarrett. And like, these guys are fine when they're healthy. If they're healthy. Outside of that, it's a lot of question marks. You can't just roll the dice and say, hey, I got four guys, maybe a second or a third, or a guy coming off the bench who can get into this rotation and potentially be something. I need more than that. We need dominance back in the trenches, something that this city has not had. Atlanta, at least. Athens has. Those guys have consistently competed and played at a high level. I don't understand why it's so complicated. Terry Fontenot, you know what to do. You're at pick 15. This is a great draft. At the edge position and on the defensive line. Pick up the phone and call one of those defensive linemen. Get them into a Falcons jersey. Walter Nolan's a great choice. Interior defensive lineman, a physical freak. Mike Green would be a great choice. I don't care who it is. Get me a defensive lineman. Get me an edge rusher. Let's get some defenders onto this team and get our asses back into the playoffs where we belong for the first time in seven seasons. It's been way too long. Way too long. Rant over. Felt like that was a first time I've had a show here talking Falcons football, and it all just kind of comes spewing out. That's just kind of the way it happens. It's a lot of pent-up frustration here. Oh, Lord. They got some decisions coming. They're $8 million in the red right now in the cap. David Onyemata, Grady Jarrett, Kirk Cousins. A lot of decisions coming Terry Fontenot's way. We'll see what happens. Just finished up with the Shrine Bowl. Over there in Texas, and then the Senior Bowl down there in Mobile. A lot of conversation coming our way. But one thing that I heard earlier this week, we'll talk about this here on the other side. Cam Newton said something that I think we need to talk about. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Some would say winning a Super Bowl is the highest achievement that you can get to in the NFL. One might disagree. We'll hear from that here in just a second. But I do want to give a quick shout-out to Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, the men's basketball program, Damon Stoudemire and company. They got a huge win. They take down the Louisville Cardinals, 21st-ranked team in the country. 77-70, that was your final there. Louisville had won, I think it was like 11 straight games. They had one of the longest winning streaks in the country. The ACC is not very good right now. But look, Louisville was one of those teams that's definitely looking like a tournament squad. And Georgia Tech and Damon Stoudemire, they get probably the biggest win of his young tenure, scoring 50 points in the second half. 50 points. They were down 11 points at halftime, and I thought it was pretty much a wrap there at that point. I covered the Jackets over there at 247 Sports, so go give that a check. Check that out at GJeffATL on Twitter if you're into that sort of thing. But look, a huge win for Georgia Tech. They're not exactly a tournament team. They're not a team that's really looking to make a lot of noise in the ACC tournament, but they're putting together a good class here, gearing up for the 25-26 season coming up next year. And I think that the writing's on the wall here for Damon Stoudemire and company. It's been kind of tough sledding here in his first year and a half or so, and this is a big win here. Big win here for the Yellow Jackets. They get a big scoring day from Lance Terry, the guard. He hits 23 points in 37 minutes. This is a team that's been injury depleted. But back to the NFL, because Cam Newton, I have a lot of respect for Cam Newton. He's Westlake High School, Atlanta guy, played at Auburn, played at Florida, had a whatever, a great college career, won a Heisman Trophy, won a national championship over there for the Auburn Tigers, and great player. Great player. Got a lot of respect for him. And look, when he was with the Carolina Panthers, he had one of the best individual seasons that we've seen from the quarterback position over the last 20 years. He won an MVP. And he had a lot of good back and forth here with Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons. And look, I respect him. I respect him a lot. He's a great football player. I think he's teetering on the Hall of Fame. I don't necessarily think he's going to get there. Good player. Something that I thought would have definitely put him into the running a little bit further on in that Hall of Fame discussion is potentially winning a Super Bowl. And he's now on with First Take. And Stephen A. asked him this question, said, would you rather have won a Super Bowl than that MVP? Take a listen to his answer.
I ask you, Cam, if you could give back that league MVP for a Super Bowl championship, would you do it?
Nope.
Oh.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Because you have to ask it through this lens. That was a very journalistic viewpoint or vantage point or response, Stephen A. I'll ask you this question, and, you know, just to pose this thought. What's more important, impact or championships?
What? What? Cam, I got a lot of respect for you. If you're listening, I'm sure you are on the Odyssey app. Download it today. I got a lot of questions, man. Why would you? No. Legacy or champ? What? Impact? You know what the biggest impact is? Winning a Super Bowl. The city of Charlotte hasn't really had a lot to hang its hat on in recent years. Not a lot of championships to go around in the city of Charlotte. Do you know how you become a legend? It's not winning an MVP. I'll tell you that much. It's not winning an MVP. It's not setting records or anything else like that. It's winning a championship. Because at the end of the day, there's one thing that this all comes back to. Win a championship. I guarantee you, if you ask Matt Ryan that same question, hand over that 2016 MVP trophy. Let Tom Brady, after that four-game suspension, give away the 28-3, get rid of that, you win the Super Bowl. I guarantee you he'd say yes. I guarantee you. Because as an ultimate competitor, your job, you are charged with winning a championship. You're charged with winning games. It just feels kind of on brand for Cam. Cam is peacocks a little bit. And you see that with his brand. You see the way he parades himself. You see the way he dresses, the things that he does, the way he acts out. It's all about Cam. It's all about Cam.
So what I can... And I think for Cam, and I disagree with him. I think you should always trade in individual accolades for a championship. But yeah, for Cam, with a lot of the criticism that he got specifically about being a quarterback and a lot of people doubting him,
yeah,
and his ability to do it, I feel like for him that MVP means a little bit more because it's validation to show you not only can I be a quarterback, but I can be a quarterback at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for him, to him, that can hold sentimental value.
Because I respect that.
For him, I think it's specifically a sense of validation for him.
Mm-hmm. Now, I respect that. I do understand where you're coming from with that. I do remember when he came out in that 2011 draft and I think he was in there with like Jake Locker and, mm-hmm, and some of these other. Yeah. And it's like he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and it's like, which one would you take? And I'm like, I remember looking at that as a kid after watching him at Auburn. He won the national championship.
How is this a conversation?
He put everybody on his back, and he was undoubtedly the best player in college football. I would say that that was the best individual season in college football history.
I'm not mad at it.
Because Joe Burrow had a great season at LSU in 2019. He ain't doing what Cam did in 2011.
Yeah, Joe Burrow was throwing the ball to Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, who was Cam Newton throwing the ball
and
to.
And he's turning around and handing the ball off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who,
yeah,
I mean, he hasn't had a great NFL career, but
Randy
he's a first-round draft
pick. Nephew was on that team. Like, Thad Moss was on that team. Like,
he was an after. He was like
and he was
wide
an after
receiver
thought.
Five.
Yeah.
Like, look, that team was loaded with talent. It was, look, offensive pedigree aside, I mean, like, that was a great season from Joe Burrow. He was the engine of that offense. But you talk about the lifeblood. Go watch highlights of Cam Newton when he played in 2010 at Auburn. That game against LSU. The only reason they won that game, when they go, they come back from 27 points down. They're down 27-0, and then they come back and beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl. Unbelievable game. Cam Newton was a special talent. He was a different breed. But at the end of the day, though, I cannot agree with this. I cannot say anything outside of your number one thing. Your number one job is to go win a championship. And you have the ultimate team game. And to single out an individual award in the ultimate team game, I think it's just a party foul. But
yeah, feels weird. It feels weird.
Speaking of championships, let's hand it over to you. Dom Taraski, a little producer segment. I like to do this here whenever I have a producer in here, whenever I have one of these shows, just because that's how I cut my teeth getting started. And I just want to do the same for you. So let's go. What you got?
So we'll kind of wrap everything up here and put a bow on this conversation. Obviously, we talked about Super Bowls versus MVPs. Well, how about we talk about Super Bowl MVPs? We're going to do a little edition of Who Am I?
Okay.
I'm going to give you a stat or a fact about a Super Bowl MVP, and I'll see if you can guess who it is.
Don't,
now,
James White, you can't do James White.
Yeah, no. Don't worry. I'm not going to go too crazy. I'm also, given our age, I'm not going to be pulling up stuff from like when Bart Starr won his Super Bowl MVP. So it's probably going to be within the last 30 years. So help you out a little bit there. First up, this one, I started off pretty easy. I am the last defensive player to win a Super
Von
Bowl
Miller.
MVP. Correct.
I remember
very
that game.
Good.
Speaking of Cam Newton,
mm-hmm.
that was a great game. 2015 was the year. 2016 Super Bowl, 2015. Von Miller, I think, had 3 sacks or something in that game.
Yeah,
he was a
phenomenal.
Man possessed in that one. They held Cam Newton, speaking of which, to, I think it was like 14 points, 12 points, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were lights out on defense. And because that was an aged, decrepit Peyton Manning.
Yeah, that was the defense that dragged Peyton Manning to a Super Bowl.
Von Miller, man, what a guy.
Yes, and that was actually 2016.
Oh, 2015, 2016.
Yeah, 2015, 2016. Yeah. 2016 was the year, technically, it was when he won it, but 2015 season. All righty. Next up. Saquon Barkley will have a chance to become the first running back to win a Super Bowl MVP since I did it. Back in the 90s. Who am I?
Well, James White won it in 2017 against the Falcons. He had the three. No.
James White did not win that.
Oh,
Tom Brady
win that?
Yes.
Oh.
You have to go all the way back. I'll even give you the year to 19. Well, it was the 97.
Terrell Davis?
Season. Yes.
Go Dawgs?
Terrell Davis won it back in 97, 98.
I could have sworn it was 98. James White.
Nope.
Man,
no,
right,
we actually, James White was close, and then Damian Williams almost won one
with
the Chiefs in the first year, but Mahomes,
of course, they didn't want to give him a quarterback. No, James White was Super Bowl MVP. You could give it to him. He had 3 touchdowns in that game.
Yeah, probably should have, but.
Yeah, but it's Tom Brady. You lead the comeback. I mean, I get it. I get it.
Number 3. From 2009 to 2014, I was the only non-quarterback to win a Super Bowl MVP.
From when to when?
From 2009 to 2014, so you got about a 5 or 6 year window. I was the only non-quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
Did Santonio Holmes do it?
He's before this. It would have been that was what 2008.
Okay. Non-quarterback.
Mm-hmm. You want another hint?
Yeah, give me another hint. Give me another hint. What we got?
Think Legion of Boom.
Oh. Oh, was it Marshawn? Oh, no, it couldn't have been Marshawn then. It was, who won it with the...
this one's
a
little
devious. When they
beat the Broncos. Uh-huh. You have the year, you have
the
team. The player is a little devious because he wasn't a real big member of the Legion of Boom.
He was that other cornerback.
So it wasn't a cornerback. It was Malcolm Smith. He was an outside linebacker. I remember he scored the defensive touchdown in that game off of like a sack.
That game was also
that game was
a blowout.
Yeah, that was the one.
That was
where
a weird
Broncos,
game.
You
too.
Remember the Broncos snapped the ball over Manning's head?
Yeah,
the very first
he picks
play
the ball
the
up.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I watched that game at my fraternity house with a bunch of pledge brothers, and we watched probably the first half of that game, and then I don't really remember the second half because
it was over.
Because the game was over, so we were shotgunning Natty Lights there on the back porch very soon after that. So. I don't really remember the second half of that game. That was nasty. That was a nasty. That's fine.
Just to give you that stretch, it was Drew Brees.
Yeah, I remember Drew Brees's. That was a great
game.
Then
Aaron Rodgers.
Tracy Porter.
Then Eli Manning.
Of course.
Then Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
And then you got Malcolm Smith there. Ooh. And then the year after that is Tom Brady.
Yeah, all quarterbacks. They love their quarterback award, man. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that the NFL loves anything more than a quarterback. They love their quarterback awards.
All right, last one here. This has two answers, and then I'll even give you bonus points if you can guess the two players.
Okay.
Or, well, some of the players, because there's four players total. Since 2000, only two franchises have had multiple wide receivers win a Super Bowl MVP. Can you name the two franchises?
Steelers.
And can you name the players? Steelers is one of them.
Hines Ward and Santonio Holmes.
There you go. There goes your two.
I remember those two.
Uh-huh.
Since 2000, wide receivers. I know the Steelers for sure.
Steelers have one. Who's the other franchise that had two wide receivers?
Shoot. So that means they've had to win two. It couldn't be the Giants because Eli Manning won it.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have had to have won two Super Bowls in that time. Could it be the... No, it wouldn't be the Kansas City Chiefs. With Tyreek Hill and those guys, no, it wouldn't be...
Funny enough, I was going to say the Chiefs, every time the Chiefs have won it's been Mahomes.
Mm-hmm. It's Patty Mahomes every time. Patriots?
There you go.
Is it the Patriots?
Uh-huh. Can you name the players?
Ironically, Randy Moss was the best one.
And he never won it.
They didn't win it in 2007. That was probably the best team I've ever seen at the NFL level. But good Lord, I don't know how they didn't win a Super Bowl. Well, they ran into the freight train that is Eli Manning in the playoff. Mm-hmm. That's what they did.
The clutchest quarterback of all time.
No, I don't remember who the actual players
were.
So,
two players for the Patriots. Obviously, the Steelers, you had it correct. It was Hines Ward and Santonio Holmes.
My mom's a Steelers fan, and so I do remember that one.
The Patriots, back in, well, most recently, 2019, it was Julian Edelman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that year.
He was a freak. He goes off 200 yards in that game.
So that was, that was the game against the Rams where it was a defensive just.
But you're in Atlanta.
Slobber
except
knocker.
Except for Julian Edelman. He just ran crossing routes over the middle of the damn field.
the entire game.
And the game sucked. The game was awful.
It wasn't like 13-7 or something like that?
Yeah, it was something ugly.
Yeah, it was
I think it was like 18-8 or 18-7 or something like that. But it was just Julian Edelman catching crossing routes for the entire game.
Exactly. And then other receiver for New England was Deion Branch.
Oh, Deion Branch.
Way.
I remember that.
Way back in, that was the 04-05 season.
Yes!
Deion Branch was somebody who, I used to play with Deion Branch in Madden all the time. Darn it. No, I knew that one. Dang it.
You did
Julian
good,
Edelman, I should have gotten that one.
You did good.
I was quick on some of them.
You were really good. The Malcolm Smith one was the tricky one. I knew that was gonna trip you up, but I decided to have some fun.
Look at you, man. Well, hey, Dom Taroski, big thank you to you. Big thank you to Jarvis Davis who joined me. Gray McCauley, always great conversation with my buddy, talking a little bit of Braves. And look, we're going to have a lot of time to talk Super Bowl right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We got all that conversation covered over the next, 8 days. 8 days and then football is into the offseason. Lots of Falcons conversation here on the station over the next couple of weeks. But big thank you to you, Dom Taroski. My name is Garrett Chapman. You've been coming off the bench with me. We'll be doing this again very soon. Hopefully having some fun on the weekends. But thank you for joining me. I'll see you next time.